The following is a presentation of the Dirt Track Channel.
Well, hi there, everybody. I'm Sean Wood, and welcome to the Sprint Car Show for Tuesday, August the 6th. On today's broadcast, we'll talk with National Sprint Car Hall of Fame inductees Glenn Fitzcharles and Bob Trussell as they talk about the life of Kramer Williamson. And we'll also talk with James McFadden on his thoughts on the upcoming 2013-2014 Australia Sprint Car season. That's all coming up next here in the Sprint Car Show on the DirtTrackChannel.com, brought to you by the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, located outside of Turn 2 at the famed Knoxville Raceway, and by Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions, and by Rod and Supply. They don't just sell them, they race them.
The National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville, Iowa, is the only sprint car museum in the world dedicated to promoting the future of sprint car racing and preserving the past. Located in Turn 2 of the world-famous Knoxville Raceway, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, except New Year's Day, Easter, Thanksgiving Day, and Christmas Day. Non-wing sprint cars, historic big cars, open-wheel roadsters, and wing sprinters are all on display in the museum, which also features a movie theater and the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame. Make plans now to stop by the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum the next time you're in Knoxville, Iowa, or shop our museum store online at www.sprintcarstuff.com. The Hall of Fame and Museum is open from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time Monday through Friday, and from noon to 5 p.m. Central Time on Saturdays and Sundays.
Hi, this is Shane Cottle. You're listening to the Sprint Car Show with Sean Wood.
Welcome back to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. As many are aware by now, in the world of sprint car racing, we suffered another great loss over the weekend when 63-year-old Kramer Williamson lost his life after a heat race accident at the Lincoln Speedway in a United Racing Company sanctioned event. And we are pleased to be joined right now under these difficult circumstances by the five-time URC champion and the winningest URC driver in its history from Pottstown. We welcome in Glenn Fitzcharles. Glenn, welcome to the broadcast, and so sorry for the loss of your friend and a fellow 2008 Hall of Fame inductee, Kramer Williamson.
Yeah, I just couldn't believe it. It's like to say when every loser, a friend and a competitor like he was, and it's just heartening, or trying to grasp or believe that it happened and stuff. But with auto racing, I guess, like I say, you just never know what's around the next corner and stuff, what possibly could happen. It's just a thing of life, I guess it is. It's just really just hard to cope with.
Glenn, what's your earliest recollections of meeting Kramer in the pits?
We always kid around and stuff, and he was joking with me, or I'd be joking him and doing something, funny and crazy and stuff, and like that there. And like I say, we raced together and stuff, and raced hard. And like I say, when we were in the pits and stuff, you were carrying on and having a good time and stuff. But when it came out, when the green flag dropped and you're in the race and stuff, we were both compatible and stuff, wanted to win, and that's why you had to drive the car to win, to beat one or the other and stuff. But you could race each other clean and pass each other. If the guy was on the outside, he'd give you room, or if you were on the inside of him, you'd give that room. And that's just the way, clean racer, and just the reputation he had, and hopefully that, I had enough that, you could race a guy hard, and if he beat you, he beat you, and just get your act back together and try to beat him the next time out.
I was with Kramer and his family on Friday evening as I was working on a feature article for the newspaper that I write for. And I was watching the races from the front stretch, trying to get some late-night action shots of Kramer. And even after the race was over, he was still pretty hard on the hammer, even after the checkered flag flew. Was that indicative of how good a racer that Kramer was, that he was on it even after the checkered flag was had been thrown?
I guess something like after checkered flag's done, when you're out there and you're having fun and enjoy, it's just hard to get your foot off the throttle to slow back down and, to come into the pits and stuff. You just want to give it that one more romp till you have to get in the pits and, shut it down for tonight's racing and stuff. That's just the way that some guys are. You just got to go and take a deep breath and take your foot off the throttle and stuff. I know Kramer usually give it a blast around, you know, one and two or something like that, and slow down and come back in and stuff. But, yeah, like I say, he was just an all-out racer. I mean, and to do it for as many years as he did and stuff, and he just enjoyed it. I mean, that's really hard after doing it for so many years and with the rivalry of the drivers and, you know, the fans and stuff like that. And I know he had plenty of fans, lots of fans, dedicated fans and stuff that followed that Pink Panther wherever he went and stuff. They knew right away who it was.
That's funny you say that, because that was going to be my next question. Do you ever recall the guys ribbing Kramer about having a pink race car? Because I don't think there are any other pink race cars out there.
I didn't really hear anybody, you know, teasing or harassing about it. They just knew. I mean, they knew of the Pink Panther, and that's just his logo that he went with and stuff, and he enjoyed the Pink Panther logo and the strip with it and stuff like that. But you know, like I know Dale Earnhardt says, you know, it takes a man to drive a pink car.
That's true.
I know we had our Central PA car. We had a pink frame. Well, they call it fuchsia, but it was a really loud pink and a yellow body parts and stuff. But it stood out and stuff. You could definitely pick it out and find out where your car was when we were in a racetrack.
Well, you know, the Pink Panther, according to the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame induction information, actually came from a Mustang that Kramer had, and it was called Dusty Rose, and it was sort of like a pinkish color, so that's where the idea for the Pink Panther actually came from. So that's back all the way to 1969. It was pretty interesting to read that on the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum. And I should note, they have Kramer's, I believe, 95 Knoxville car on display, and a very nice gesture, nice wreath placed by the car in the Hall of Fame and Museum right now. Let's talk about that year, 2008. Two URC drivers, yourself and Kramer, inducted. You had Melvin, Tony Bettenhausen, Johnny Parsons Sr., just to name a few. What was that weekend like there, and do you recall, if anything, what Kramer may have said during his acceptance speech?
Yeah, it was, you know, I said out there when we got inducted out there and stuff in the Hall of Fame together, to a dirt track racer that, you know, never got the Indianapolis or the Daytona 500 NASCAR, that I would feel for a dirt track racer is the pinnacle of your racing career in dirt track racing. I mean, to be associated with A.J. Foyt, you know, Pennelly Jones, and Mario Andretti, and fellas like that that ran Indianapolis and won Indianapolis, and being associated in the same house as they are, Kramer and I were just ecstatic. Just, you know, like I said, the pinnacle of our career is right there in Knoxville, Iowa, at the Hall of Fame. And it was funny. We, you know, my family all went with me. My mom went with me and stuff. And Kramer and stuff were sitting around the table next to us and stuff. And they had called me up first for the induction ceremony. And then, like, the next one or two after me, Kramer came up. And first thing he says, I can't believe this. He says, all the years I've been chasing him to beat him, race after race to try to beat him and stuff, and he beats me into the Hall of Fame. He says, I can't believe it. I finished behind him again. Everybody started cracking up, and so did I. I mean, he's just funny. He comes out with these off-the-wall one-liners things and stuff, and like I said, I still remember that and stuff. We really had a good time out there and stuff, and like I say, him and I both felt that was our fulfilling of our career with, you know, dirt track racing and sprint car racing.
Was there ever any talk amongst the two of you about would you like to have run the Daytona 500 or run Indianapolis? Do you ever recall any conversation like that?
I don't remember hearing Kramer, you know, saying about that and stuff, but that was as a younger driver and stuff. I was, you know, watching the Indy 500 as a youngster and stuff. Watching that, so I always would have liked it done. You just drove the Indianapolis 500 and stuff. And I used to tell people after we won our feature, got interviewed and stuff, I said, I know Roger Penske had my phone number, but he must have lost it. He hasn't called me yet and stuff. It's just a, you know, little bit of fun and carrying on about it. But, yeah, I know, like I say, I would have loved to run the 500. And, you know, because as a kid growing up, that was a major sport at that time and stuff, and a major race at the time. It still is. Still is one of the, you know, top races beside the Daytona 500.
Well, we're talking with Glenn Fitzcharles, the all-time winningest United Racing Company sprint car driver and a five-time series champion, as we reflect back on the life of the late Kramer Williamson. Glenn, any race that stands out in your mind as one of the best battles you ever had with Kramer during your career there in URC?
I know down at Delaware and stuff, at US 13, that we had a lot of good competition races and stuff. And at the time, we were running for Don and Darlene Kerr, and he was driving for Henry Fenimore, the BNF Towing 28 car. That, we had quite a few good races and battles there. And also talked about his car out in Knoxville. That's Jen Jammy's 84 Ford power car was a big thing because, you know, there wasn't that many Fords running with United Racing Company cars and stuff. And that I seen that out there at Knoxville, and I seen on the computer and stuff here, a Facebook thing, that they had a reef next to the car out there, which, you know, they do a fantastic job of, you know, of recognizing the sprint car drivers and the families and stuff like that. I mean, they had the reef next to the car out there. They had that he won the championship with that year with Vince Ganjami and stuff. So it was kind of a real nice tribute. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know how many times that we were together and racing tight for the win and stuff, you know, who was going to be the second or who was going to win the race and stuff. But like I say, I know quite a few times down at the Delmar, Delaware, and Route 13 or 13 Speedway, they call it then, but a lot of, you know, tough competition racing there and stuff. And like I said, if you know he was in your heat race or the feature, you know you had to run hard to beat him and stuff. He was till the checker flag fell, the race wasn't over.
Do you get out to any races? I know you retired back in 99, but do you get out to races?
I go occasionally and stuff up to Grandview and have the Thunder on the Hill shows, and but right now, been, you know, busy with my granddaughter and grandson. They run flat track motorcycle races, and my grandson's an expert flat tracker, and my granddaughter, she's a pro expert, a pro rider and stuff with the 450s and stuff, and I've been going with those with the, you know, grandkids and stuff right now, so I've got it more into the motorcycles and stuff. But it's I think it's, you know, it's really hard for an ex-driver to go to the races and sit there and watch all these young guys having all the fun without you.
What do you think that is? Because I know our good friend, the late Bill Singer, didn't go, I think, to maybe one or two races after Flemington shut down. And you hear a lot of guys, now, I mean, yeah, there are some exceptions to the rule where you have Johnny Rutherford still out there driving the pace car for the Izod IndyCar Series, and he's around the sport and mentoring the young guys. But why is it that racers and announcers just can't go back to the races once their career is over?
Well, like I said, I think it's in your blood to be a driver or an announcer or whatever it is. It's just in your blood that you want to be in the competition or, you know, right in the mainstream of the action and stuff. And, you know, when you go to races, you see these other younger guys, you know, coming up through like we did, and you're seeing them making moves and stuff. Like, you say, oh, he shouldn't be doing that. You know, he should be going, you know, he's going, you know what's going to happen before it happens because you've been through it and done it. And that's why I think it's really hard for a past driver, you know, to go there and watch a race and stuff. And like I say, just missing the excitement and the thrill of the competition. I mean, the winning is a nice part. I mean, racing's fun, but they always say it's a lot more fun when you're winning.
That's for sure. And you were mentioning that the grandkids are racing the flat track motorcycles. So does Grandpa sit there and go, you know, maybe when nobody's looking, I might just jump on out there and see if I can handle this two-wheeler and see how different it is from a four-wheeler? Ever get the itch to jump on the bike?
Not racing. I ride on the streets and stuff. And I had some motorcycles for the street riding and stuff. Mm-hmm. But you know, believe it or not, the grandkids will not ride in the street. They say it's actually safer racing the motorcycles than being on the street. But I just know watching them, it's a kid's sport there, you know, with the flat track motorcycle race. When they run Springfield Mile, and my granddaughter was out in Sacramento, California, and she just won the mile track out there against the boys and stuff. This is the second year in a row that she won out there, and she's just really doing a fantastic job, you know, with the motorcycles and stuff. For a 95-pound 4'11" girl, just unbelievable how consistent. I mean, she just uses her head, and like I say, she don't give it up until the checker flag's over. She, the last race out there, coming off of turn four, she was running second and drafted by the boy for the win by half a bike. People just went crazy again in the stands seeing this little girl run this big motorcycle.
Sounds like she's got some of Grandpa's genes there, because I remember you were the same way. It was all the way to the checkered flag fell.
Well, like I say, it's never over till the checker falls. So you just got to give it all, you know, give it 100% the whole race and stuff. And like Joe Bullock told me at Reading, he says, if you can run the same lap at the end of the race as you do at the beginning of the race, he says, I'll guarantee you, you'll be in the top three or you'll win the race. He said, because a lot of guys can't keep the same pace through the whole race and stuff. He said, and I took that in heed and remembered that since he told me that, and that's what I did the rest of my career, just remembering what, you know, some wise theories and stuff that, you know, kept that in mind.
What do you see as the difference between the racers of today and the racers of you, Kramer, and that era of sprint car drivers in general?
Well, I think when Kramer and us and, you know, Freddie Raymer and them guys, I mean, they do their own work on the cars. They know what to do with the chassis, you know, for shocks and stuff like that. I mean, it was more on hands with the car, not just carrying your gear back to the track and your helmet and stuff and getting dressed and going and getting in the seat. I think more knowing, I think it's more with the sprint car guys too, that more of the drivers are involved with, you know, with torsion bar setups with the cars and stuff than today. I mean, a lot of younger guys and stuff, they get a ride and stuff, they just, you know, carry their bag and stuff, and if it goes fast, it goes fast. If it doesn't work, then the mechanic in the pit's got to make a change to see if it, you know, makes it better for them. But I think it's when Kramer and us all came up, it was more on hands because, you know, you just couldn't afford to pay a mechanic or have the backing that they do today, you know, to have a mechanic, paid mechanic to help you.
And you had a pretty good mechanic in your son's Stretch back in the days, I do recall.
Yeah, that was kind of a really good setup. I mean, he'd stand on the truck and watch what the car was doing, and I'd come in and tell him what I felt the car was doing. So him and I conversed back and forth what, you know, what the car was doing, entering the corner into the apex of the corner and stuff, and we talked it over. And honest to God, I mean, we never took a vacation in the summer and stuff like that. We always had to do it in the wintertime because we worked on the car and maintained the car, I mean, every night until we got loaded up to leave for whatever track we were going to. Like you say, very seldom that we had a mechanical failure or something like that, but like you say, I do the motor work, nozzles and timing and the valve setting, and he do the suspension and tires and stuff like that. So we had a really good, you know, combination. And my nephews and stuff, they would come down during the week, maybe a night or two, and help, you know, clean up stuff, get the trailer clean, and really had a good working relationship. And that's what I say with Kramer and stuff, with his boy Kurt and stuff, that they worked together and stuff before that Kurt went on, and, you know, with the NASCAR set up deals and shocks and all that he's doing involved with. And I'd always ask Kramer, you know, how the boy was doing and stuff. And, oh, yeah, he was really, really proud of his success and practice that he was involved with and stuff. He, you know, like I say, it was just a family affair, just the same as my family with racing.
Yeah, that's very true. And his daughter Felicia was talking with me on Friday night, and she asked me if I remembered who she was, and I did, because I have seen her around for a number of years. And she wondered if I remembered seeing a girl run across the track at Sewens Grove Speedway back in 2008 in high heels with Kramer in tow, because she was graduating from Penn State on a Saturday. URC had a race at Sewens Grove, and I believe somebody had to qualify the car, and there comes Kramer and Felicia across the track, and Felicia still had her high heels on from graduation.
Yeah, that's what I say. Stuff like that, you remember forever and stuff like you're saying. It's, like I say, it's a family of get, even though it's racing and stuff, it's families involved with, and they just love the sport like it is and stuff. And, you know, it's stuff that you never forget. I mean, I remember talking to Tommy Henerschitz and stuff, and guys were asking about this race and that race, and just listening to him. And he said, oh, yeah, you know, with his Dutch accent and stuff. Anyway, we did this here and that. I said, how can this guy remember 30 or 40 years ago about this race or that race, but now guys talk to me about different races and stuff, and for what reason, you know, it sticks in your mind about this race or that race that you remember what happened and stuff. I mean, I can't remember last week, but I remember 20 years ago.
Well, I'm sure you, I mean, believe me, I remember the races at Flemington quite well, and the Labor Day night races with URC on Labor Day Monday night at Flemington, and of course the races up at Sealands Grove and Port Royal Williams Grove and in Syracuse. So, you know, it's a tough loss. It's our third sprint car driver since May that we've lost, and you know, we've had a few black eyes thanks to the media who's been misinformed in the USA Today and the New York Times. But, you know, we'll rebound and we'll get back. And it's just such a shame about the loss of Kramer over the weekend. What do you think will be the lasting impression about Kramer's racing career that fans, say 10, 15, 20 years from now, besides the Pink Panther car, will be talking about when they talk about Kramer Williamson?
Well, I think myself, I think his personality, good humor that he had with everybody, the time he spent talking to the fans, signing autographs for the kids. I mean, you give a kid 5 minutes of your time after races and shake his hand and thank him for coming over, I'm telling you, from experience, you'll have a fan for life. I mean, that's what I think with Kramer's same way, that he'd stand there and talk to him. If he was the first guy at the racetrack, most of the time he was the last one to leave at nights after the races were over and stuff. I mean, that's what I think with Kramer and stuff, that fans will remember and stuff and pass on through the years of, you know, of things going by. And like I say, time doesn't wait for any of us and stuff, so you might as well just enjoy it and fulfill your life with what you can while you're here.
Well, Glenn, we want to thank you very much for taking time out of your day to chat with us here on the Sprint Car Show in this difficult time once again for the Sprint Car community as we remember the life of Kramer Williamson. And again, thank you for your time.
Well, thank you for calling and asking me about it. And like I said, Joanne and I want to pass on our most condolences, you know, to the family, Sharon and Kurt and Felice and stuff. You know, and I know it's a hard time to go through and stuff, but time will heal, you know, some of the pain and stuff, but he'll never be forgotten. I mean, I say he'd be gone, but not forgotten.
The all-time winningest driver in the history of the Knight Racing Company, Glenn Fitzcharles, joining us here on the Sprint Car Show. We will take a break and be back with more right after this. The world leader in suspension technology, Penske Racing Shocks has been providing custom-built, high-performance shock absorbers to all forms of racing for over 20 years. Offering only the highest quality suspension products, shocks are available in non, single, double, triple, and four-way adjustable configurations. All Penske Racing Shocks are hand-built, tailored to meet a driver's feel or car setup, and dyno-tested, ensuring the highest attention is paid to detail, consistency, and performance. For your short track needs, contact Dave Reedy at Penske Shocks at 610-375-6180. That's 610-375-6180. Penske Racing Shocks are available direct from the manufacturer or through many dealers worldwide. Visit them on the web at www.penskeshocks.com. Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions.
Hi, this is Nicole Bauer. You're listening to the Sprint Car Show with Sean Wood.
Welcome back to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. We are heading out to Des Moines, Iowa right now to welcome in the 1993 National Sprint Car Hall of Fame inductee and former car owner, Bob Trussell. Bob, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to speak with us. I know it's such a great loss as you and Kramer Williamson had teamed up on several occasions, even going as far around the world as Australia. So yes, we appreciate your time here.
Yeah, I'm going to miss Kramer. I just talked to him about a month ago. He called me, and because they changed their phone number or something, I didn't have a number for him, and Sharon sent me an email and said, give me their cell phone number. And then I misplaced it, and then Kramer called me, and then I got it again, so I know it now. So anyway, that's a sad day for us.
And if it's nothing personal, sir, what was the gist of the conversation with Kramer?
Oh, just typical racing stuff. How was it going? What was I doing? And what he'd been doing? And that was it. Wasn't nothing special. Just a BS session, you might say.
So how did you two hook up and make such a potent driver-car owner combination when you did race?
I don't really remember exactly how we met. I went to Pennsylvania several times because I stayed with Jan Opperman. I'd go out there in the spring when he was driving for Bogart, and we just make the rounds. And one night they pitted side by side at Susquehanna. I think he was driving that Bud Grimm's Ford 88 car, and I got to visiting with him, and we just said someday maybe we can get together and do a little racing. So that's about how it worked.
What were your first impressions that you recall about Kramer?
I was impressed. It was pretty steamy that night. I remember his bubble shield, I think he was wearing, fogged up, but he impressed me.
Did you ever see a pink race car in all the travels that you have been through during your career, whether it was Knoxville or with Jan Opperman? Do you ever recall seeing somebody having a pink race car in the pits?
Not really. I know Kramer, that was the Pink Panther.
Yep.
I remember that. So, no, I don't. Not that I can recall a pink race car. I've seen it. There's a girl that races at Knoxville now that has some pink on her car, but I never did ever see a pink one before, no.
You said you were impressed by Kramer. What was it that impressed you the most?
Well, he was pretty darn smooth. I mean, he knew his line, and he didn't vary from it until he got to traffic and had to pass somebody, you know. He was just a kind of a natural, I thought. Of course, at that time, I didn't realize he'd been racing since high school, running and modifying at Silver Spring or stuff, so he'd had some laps the first time I'd seen him.
And back in those days, was that typical of the top runners, the smoothness, compared to what we see nowadays where people are making bonsai moves and it seems like there's more crashing? Was that typical of a top runner back in the day to be very smooth?
Oh, yeah, I think so. You couldn't cowboy, you know. You had to be nice at the throttle, and that just showed the lines of a guy that knew what was going on, you know.
Well, Glenn Fitzcharles was just on our show just a couple minutes ago, and he was talking about Kramer, and at the 2008 Hall of Fame induction ceremonies, they brought Glenn up first, and then Kramer a few drivers later, and the first thing that Kramer said was, "I've been trying to beat this guy all these years, and here he beats me into the Hall of Fame."
Yeah, right.
He seemed like he always had a great sense of humor. What do you recall about his sense of humor?
Oh yeah, he was. He never let a lot of things bother him, man. He was pretty cool.
Now guys, you teamed up and you were 2 for 2 in making the A main at Knoxville. Talk a little bit about what that was like back in the day to make the A main with Kramer.
Well, that was impressive. I mean, there ain't too many people that just walk in here, especially at the Nationals, and make the A feature. You know, and he made it with the same car that Kinzer had won with the year before.
Wow.
So then the next year, the next time he run it, he run one of my coilover cars. And I can't remember which year it was. It must have been the first year when he made the A main that Dave Blaney did too. And they both were right there for Rookie of the Year at the Nationals. And Blaney got it because he ran one spot ahead of us in the A main.
Oh, geez. Bob, what is it about Knoxville, as much as we've heard about this place, but what is it about that track? As you just said, you can't just walk in there and have success right away. Why is that?
Well, I don't know whether they're intimidated by it because of the history of the place. I don't know. But there isn't a lot of guys that make the A feature the first time they come to the Nationals. I know that. So, like, I raced there for 17 years before I won. It was there, I think, 6 years, I think, before we made the feature the first time.
Wow.
So it's no easy place to do that. The first time we got together was in 1980, and he wanted me to come to Syracuse, and I just told him there ain't no way. I was packing a container to go to Australia. So I said, I just need the help, and I ain't got time to come out there. So he called me 2 or 3 times, and finally he said, "Hey, I got it figured out." He said, "I'll fly out, help you pack the container, and then I'll haul the car back, and then you just fly back. So anyway, we decided on that, and I told him, well, that's a good idea, because there's a race at Mason City, Iowa, Saturday night qualifying, Sunday night the features. And I said, you can drive the car there, maybe you won't even like it, so maybe I won't have to bother to go to Syracuse. So he come back, he won the heat race on Saturday night, and Sunday night he won the feature. So so that was his first trip here, and that was in that Vice Grip car. So anyway, after he won the feature, he said, this is a nice car, so he took it to Syracuse for me.
And the Moody Mile can be as intimidating as Knoxville. What do you recall about the races up at the Moody Mile that you two were in?
I had a new engine at Gertie's, and I told him, I said, well, you'll have to stop at Gertie's and get the engine, and I'll try to get out there a day early so he can put it in. Well, Trim Gunnell, he put it in a trim shop, and they put it in for me, and I got to Syracuse, and I didn't have to do nothing but just make sure the car was all right to go, you know. And it was a fresh Gertie 406, and which was a, kind of the motor of the day. I can't remember where we started, because we had a little problem with the throttle. It wasn't getting no RPM, but what had happened is at Mason City, the throttle didn't feel right to him, and we took some duct tape and taped it a little two before so he'd get his foot right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, somewhere between racing there and coming and going to Syracuse, and that thing came loose and was under the throttle pedal.
Oh, geez.
I found that Saturday morning when it was cleaning some leaves out of it. And I said, hey, I think I found our trouble. Well, then we wasn't sure what gear to put in because we hadn't qualified very good. But, we was in the feature. But anyway, he started. I can't even remember where he started now. But we got to third. And they said at the driver's meeting, if you start smoking a little bit, we're going to point the black flag at you. And if you kind of cool it, back it off maybe a little bit, we'll let you finish. But if you keep gassing it, we're going to black flag you. Well, he got to third in Champagne, or he got up to behind Champagne. Of course, Kinzer was kind of long gone. But anyway, it started to smoke a little bit, and he backed off. And I think we run fifth or sixth. But we might have run a third if we hadn't had the problem.
Wow. That's a pretty interesting story.
Yeah, well, when they put the engine, I had an oil breather that bolted on the front of the injector, and it was always made a good place to push on if you end up trying to put an engine in. Well, that's what happened. Somebody must have pushed on a little bit, and it cracked the weld. Aluminum's in a lot of good penetration anyway, and it started blowing it up out of the breather pipe there. So that's what happened. That's why it was smoking, so.
And Syracuse is not a place where you want to start having smoke coming out of the engine. And
no, that's for sure.
We've seen what happens when sprint cars crash at Syracuse, and it's not a pretty thing. That is definitely
for sure.
I
remember the crash. They always showed pictures of Van May. He crashed there
the
year before.
That was a pretty nasty crash. You also went over and had quite a bit of success and some good times, from what I understand, over in Australia. What was it like back in the day to go over and race in Australia, concerning how different the tracks are compared to what Kramer was used to running here in the Northeast, to what their little bull rings are like?
Yeah, they were all short tracks and a lot of sand in them because they raced motorcycles on them too. It's a total hookup place. I mean, we had wings that were monsters, like 5x8, which is 40 foot, and had the radius rods as high as you can get them, and no air in the tires, and you can still spin them.
Oh, jeez.
They've since now, they have so many Yanks come down there now that they've since made some better racetracks now and got some more dirt on them and don't run the motorcycles as much now, I guess. So, because I haven't been over there since 2005, I think it was. But, no, that was fun. Kramer won a race down there for me at Bunbury Speedway, so... So anyway, we only run in 84 we went down there. They were going to have a owner's strike on sprint cars and wasn't going to have a season down there.
Hmm.
And well, at the last minute, Con Migro from Perth, who is long ways from the rest of the country, this car on the west side, he called me. In fact, I was at Syracuse when he called and said, "Hey, I'll put a deal together for you. Bring two cars and you can run 10 races." In Western Australia, and so I didn't have nothing ready because I thought they wouldn't going to race. So, anyway, I got back home and got a couple cars together and got them shipped. So, and we went down to Kramer Williamson and Rocky Hodges were my two drivers on that trip. So.
I just emailed Con the other day about the untimely passing of Kramer Williamson, and he was sad to hear about that. We're talking with Bob Trussell, the 1993 Hall of Fame inductee in the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame, and a car owner, a driver, and a gentleman who knew Kramer Williamson for many, many years. Bob, outside of the Pink Panther, and I asked this same question to Glenn Fitzcharles just a few moments ago, that car is forever going to be etched into our minds. It's probably one of the most unique paint schemes that has ever been out on a dirt track. What do you think 10 years from now, 15 years from now, outside of that race car, what do you think the race fans and the drivers will remember the most about Kramer Williamson?
Just the Pink Panther, I guess. Because, of course, he won a lot of races. He's a true good guy out there in Pennsylvania. I mean, that's everybody looked up to him, and at least when I was out there, they sure did. I mean, and I mean, everybody out there just loved him because he was just a heck of a guy, you know. Just and his dad was terrific. His mother, we stayed at their house a few times, and Kramer and Earl, his dad, they stayed here at my house with us when they would come out here for the Nationals and stuff. So, and we always got along great. So I think what one thing I'd like to see happen is the car come back to that one that he's still got. It's not tore up, you know. Bring it back for the National or back for the Hall of Fame someday, and spend a year in here.
I think that would be quite appropriate.
There's a car in there that Ford that Becca Anderson drove too.
Mm-hmm.
That car, it's in the Hall of Fame.
Any funny stories that you can share with us about Kramer on your trips, whether it be to Iowa or to Syracuse or to Australia?
Oh God, just right offhand. I've been trying to think because I thought you'd probably ask me a question about like that. I don't know. It seems like we was laughing all the time. I don't know. I can't really say anything that really. I remember when we were. And the first time we was at Syracuse, after I flew in, they picked me up at the airport. And a friend of mine that used to travel with me a lot, Jerry Payton, he worked for United Airlines, so we used to be able to fly pretty good. So we stayed in, Kramer had a camper there in the infield at Syracuse, and we stayed in it. And next morning for breakfast, he said, what do you want for breakfast? I said, oh, I don't care. He said, well, we got eggs or oatmeal or whatever. And I said, well, I'll take eggs. And he said, how you want them? I said, well, I want him up, and he says, oh, you like dippy eggs, huh? I'd never heard that before because I dip my toast in it, you know, and to eat the yellow, and you got a big kick out of that because I like dippy eggs.
Dippy eggs. No, I've never sunny side up, yes, dippy, no, I had never heard of that one, but the fans who are listening to the Sprint Car Show now have heard of dippy eggs, and so.
Yeah, when they stayed here, I remember when it was time for Earl to get up, Kramer would say, come on, Earl, this is where they're biting.
Well, yeah, it seems so surreal as I had the pleasure to spend some time with the family on Friday night in the pits at Williams Grove as we were getting ready to do a feature on Kramer for our Friday Motorsports section for the newspaper, and we heard the news first breaking at Port Royal Speedway that he had been airlifted. And it's never good when you hear that. Three drivers since the end of May. It's just
right.
been rough. But I guess, Bob, you know, we're going through this period. It is rough on the sport. The national media, the AP, the New York Times, the USA Today, they're sort of kicking us while we're down because they don't understand our sport. But I'd have to think back in the day, it was so much more common because of the safety factors that were not there that we have today. How impressed are you by how far we have come in the sport in terms of from being a car builder and a car owner, the amount of safety that has now been brought into consideration?
Oh, I tell you, it's nothing like it used to be, that's for sure. The seats that they have in them things and with all the restraints and stuff, it's... you often wonder how you could even get hurt in one of them, you know. But, you know, I lost a grandson about 10 years or so ago at Knoxville, so I know what it is to go through that deal. But now this, in fact, when Gary Scott lost his life at Knoxville in 1982, I told him I wasn't coming back till he put wings on him. And because, I mean, I know wings don't ain't the total deal, but it sure made a difference at Knoxville. I mean, they didn't lose very many after that. But it was a pretty regular deal, it seemed like, at Knoxville for a while.
Was the track almost too fast for non-wing sprint cars at Knoxville?
Well, I think it is, because the corner speed is so great, you know, that you don't have to slow down for the turn. You can run them wide open, you know. And they've tried everything down there. They tried once taking some of the bank out of the place, and believe it or not, which would make they couldn't understand that. But they've tried different stuff with the wings, and it don't seem to make any difference. So, and they've tried air pressure rules and all kinds of different stuff, and it just they just don't slow them down. Each year they seem like they go faster.
In typical racer fashion, that's what they want to do. They want to keep going faster. And
yeah, right. That's they don't want to back up. That's for sure. Nobody wants to go see them go slower.
No. And they're trying to unhook the cars, and they went back to the flat wings instead of the dish wings.
Yeah, right.
It's like at some point we just need to get all on the same page and have the deep dish wings back again here in Central PA. Coming back to the Hoosiers, probably the best thing they could have done, because the Goodyear tires, that wasn't racing, as a few drivers said.
No.
And, you know, but I myself also enjoy the non-wings, and it takes a special and different driver to drive a non-wing car, I think, than it does taking a winged car, because there's such different animals.
Yeah, right. But everybody said that, you know, when they put wings on, said, well, that ain't going to – you lose the driver. Everybody can run wide open with them, but I'll tell you, you got to have your car more right with a wing than you ever did with a non-wing. You just can't compensate for it. You know what I mean? Like a driver could, if he was off a little bit with a non-wing car, if your driver was brave enough, he could make it go. You know, but boy, with a wing car, if you ain't right, you can get lapped in about three laps.
Yeah, isn't that the truth?
Of course, I raced without a wing, you know, for many, many years, and enjoyed it. But, I don't know, we fought for the wings because they were starting losing so many drivers. And in fact, since 1982, I've never raced another car without a wing.
That's interesting. Well, Bob, we want to thank you so much for taking time out of your day to join us here on the Sprint Car Show. And we appreciate you sharing some candid insight and some stories with us about your good friend, the late Kramer Williamson.
Okay, thank you.
Sure thing. 1993 Hall of Fame inductee, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame, Bob Trussell, joining us here on the Sprint Car Show. We will take a break, and we will be back with more right after this. Championship race teams like Donnie Schatz depend on quality parts to make it through a season. That's why they and other champions rely on rod ends from Rod End Supply.
Hi, this is Bob Douglas, and for 23 years, we have been delivering the best quality rod ends on the market, with on-time deliveries and customer service second to none. And this philosophy will continue.
To learn more about Rod End Supply, call them toll-free at 1-800-284-2902 or visit them online at rodendsupply.com. Rod End Supply. They don't just sell them, they race them.
Hi, this is Logan Schuhart. You're listening to the Sprint Car Show with Sean Wood.
And welcome back to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. We're going to bring in another one of the Australian competitors who is over to race Knoxville, but he made a lifelong lasting impression with his very first race and a near victory last Tuesday night at the Thunder in the Hill race at the Grandview Speedway. We welcome in the current Australian champion and the two-time defending World Series of Sprint Cars champion, James McFadden. James, great to talk with you. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, sure thing. Boy, Tuesday night, you put on one well of a show. You had never seen Grandview before. What were your first impressions when you got there?
It was a pretty cool place. It's kind of like what we've got back home. The size kind of suited me a little more than what we've been racing on, so it was good to get on something smaller and racy, which I've been missing a little bit.
Yeah, it is interesting how the tracks down under are real tight bull rings, and we have some bull rings here in the States, scattered throughout the country, but here in central Pennsylvania, you have the big, long, half-mile tracks. I know you raced over at the Grove. We've seen you at Sewan's Grove. You've been up to Port Royal. What are your impressions on the big tracks here in central Pennsylvania?
For my personal driving style, I'm not a big fan of the half-mile joints, but I really haven't done much on them to like them yet. The car just does a lot of things that I'm not used to, which kind of catches me out a little bit. But, yeah, it's good to get on them and do some laps, and I'd like to come back and do a lot more so I can obviously get better on them.
And how big of a speed difference is there to going off into Turn 1 at Williams Grove compared to going into Turn 1 at Archfield Speedway there in Brisbane?
Yeah, a lot. The tracks are actually quite similar in the way they corner, but the straights are obviously three or four times longer than what Archfield is. So the cars do, you know, like I said, a lot of weird things. The wind, we don't have to worry about, you know, bad air back home. So that's a big factor as well that I'm not used to yet. So it's taken me a while to get used to the whole half mile way you race, because it's completely different. It's not elbows up. You've got to be a lot smoother. And yeah, it's just a whole new ball game for me.
Well, you timed fourth quick last Tuesday down at Grandview, and then you made your way through in the feature up towards the front. You took over the lead late in the race, and then you got a lap car that decided to keep doing one slide job after another on you. Does that get frustrating when I'm sure you can see the move over flag, and Lord knows in turn two you can see the leaderboard at Grandview. Does it get frustrating after like two or three times that a lap car is still doing slide jobs and maybe not realizing you are the leader?
Yeah, there's no revision mirrors in sprint cars, so it does get very, very frustrating, but, you know, that's a part of this sport, I guess. It really wasn't that cool, but that's the way the sport goes. It's it can work to your favor sometimes, and this time it didn't, but, you know, next time it might, so it's just the way it goes, I guess. It wasn't that exciting at the time, though.
No, I wouldn't think so. I detect then that you are looking forward to coming back to Grandview, and it doesn't owe you a win. Another driver sort of owes you a win, but I detect that you do want to come back to Grandview.
Yeah, I'd like to go back to Pennsylvania. Obviously, that was the first time I'd raced there, so, you know, to race Williams Grove and Grandview again would be awesome, just to go back to tracks that I've done a race on it, so I don't have to, you know, relearn the car and how to set it up and drive it and stuff, so we can, yeah, do more laps on them, which obviously means you're going to get better and better. So, yeah, I hope I can get back there, and, yeah, let's see if I can get there next year.
Well, you were out racing on Saturday night with the Roll of Outlaws in the Ironman 55. Obviously, that's a race that isn't held anywhere else. I don't think you guys have... do you have a 50-lapper down under for the sprint cars?
No, we have a 50-lap race at Archfield, which is our longest race. So that's, you know, I like the long races. It kind of suits me a little more. It's good fun.
Talk to me a little bit about racing there at I-55. Obviously, it's a high-bank track. Can you compare it at all to the high banks at Grandview, or is it different?
It's a lot different. It's obviously a lot smaller. Things happen a lot faster at Peebly. It's kind of unique how close you run to the fence there and how you drive the car. But Grandview was, you know, a little more spread open. You could probably drive it into the corner a little harder, which kind of suited the way I drive. And yeah, they're very different tracks, but you know they're both cool to race at.
And, of course, you'll be gearing up for another run at the Knoxville Nationals last year, a 15th place in the B Main. What did you learn from last year that you think will help you have a better showing this year?
I kind of know what to expect now. Last year, obviously, being the first time on a track like this, it kind of, the car does things that I'm not used to or don't know what's going to happen when it does it. With the dirty air, which is huge here compared to Australia, we don't really get that. So it's hard to learn what the car's going to do, but now having a few laps on it from last year and doing the Capitani Classic yesterday or 2 days ago. It definitely helps me for my confidence wise as well, to know what the car's going to do and how it's going to react when I do certain things, and obviously to get the car to a comfortable level for me is good as well. We just learn a lot from last few times we've been here, and hopefully we can get a little faster each time we hit the track.
Now, you say the car is doing different things. Are you talking about the car dancing around and the way the wind is playing in the dirty air, not only on the top wing but also on the front wing as well?
Yeah. Obviously, with the dirty air, you can't follow cars, especially the big half miles. The car does, you know, it darts around and sends you in places that you really didn't want to go, but that's where it sends you because of the dirty air. So back in Australia, you can run straight in up behind someone and touch their nerf bar and the air not affect you. So it's hard for me to learn that and tell the crew guys what the car's doing, because, you know, I'm feeling three or four different things that are new for me as well. So it's tough, but, you know, I guess all the big races are on half mile tracks, so you got to get good at it and learn what the car's doing.
How many drivers from Australia made the trip up to race at Knoxville this year besides yourself?
There's always probably five or six Australians here. I know Brooke Tatnall, Ian Madsen, Terry Madsen, those guys are all here. Jamie Ville's here as well. So I think there'd be four to six guys, I would think. Not 100% sure, but yeah, there's always those guys that come over each year and give it a go.
And, of course, the season won't be too long to begin in Australia, and you'll be going after a third consecutive World Series of Sprint Car titles. Talk to me about winning that championship back-to-back last year, and what are you looking forward to with the World Series of Sprint Cars again for the 2013-2014 calendar season?
We had a really good year last year, probably my best year, so it was good to pick up the Speedweek. World Series Speedweek and the series again. We had a really, really good year. We were pretty consistent all year, which really helped our championship position. But yeah, just really looking forward to it. Hopefully we go contractor this year. We'll just see how we're going. But it's going to be good. It's a little shorter this year, only 12 rounds. So it'll count to be consistent, and let's just hope we can be. Hopefully bring some experience for what I've learned in America and take it there and hopefully win races.
And outside of World Series of Sprint Cars, what's the plan for the schedule for the 2013-2014 season?
We will do all the Blue Ribbon events, all the big races, hopefully get, 40 to 50 races in, which would be good for us. Do pretty much what we did last year, the Classic and Australian title and all those sort of races. And just pretty much go where the big races are and try and do races in between that.
I've heard people that I've talked to say that the Australian title is your guys' version of Knoxville. Having gone through Knoxville last year, can you compare anything in terms of preparation, in terms of the heightened awareness of trying to make a feature to capture that coveted prize trophy?
For us, it would be the Grand Annual Classic in Warrnambool. That would be our closest race. They've got big fan appreciation days and there's T-shirt trailers everywhere and, big corporate grandstands and all that sort of stuff. So the Classic, we get 110 cars for the Classic, so it's probably our biggest race and it's our closest thing to the Nationals. But yeah, the Australian title is a big race. It's probably the oldest, most prestigious race in Australia, but for me, definitely the Classic would be a bigger win.
And I'm sure, as you know by now, being out there in Knoxville, Tony Stewart injured, breaking a leg last night at Oskaloosa, and once again, our lovable NASCAR media folks are throwing the sprint car world under the bus, saying that it's not as safe as it as NASCAR is. And I don't know if they don't understand. We don't have safer barriers at racetracks. You just can't do that on dirt tracks like you could do at Indy or other places. what's the media coverage like in Australia when something like this happens? Because I know V8 supercars are, I mean, I am a big fan of V8 supercars. I watch it. When something like this happens, does the media get on the bandwagon and start throwing the dirt boys under the bus, or is it a different approach in Australia from the national media?
It's a fairly big different approach. You know, the V8 supercars don't, drivers don't race sprint cars at all. They, you know, they kind of stay in their own kind of class, and we stay in ours. But yeah, we don't get the immediate attention, obviously, that the NASCAR guys do when they drive cars. But I kind of think it sucks. If he wants to race a sprint car, he should be allowed to race a sprint car. You know, you can break your leg getting out of a bus or racing a car, it doesn't really matter. So it's unfortunate for him, but I think the media take it too far.
I agree with you on that one. We're talking with James McFadden, the current Australian number one driver, winning the Australian title last year in Brisbane and also the back-to-back defending World Series of Sprint Cars champion. Speaking of the V8 supercars, down the road, any thoughts on possibly running with those boys? And I'm sure you know a lot of the guys that race in the series. Anybody there that you think could cross over and jump in a sprint car and have a pretty go at it?
Yeah, I would do it, but, you know, you've got to have a lot of money behind you to get there. And to me, sprint car racing and dirt racing is a lot better than bitumen racing. So I would rather just race sprint cars than V8 supercars. But yeah, I'm sure those guys would be quite good in a sprint car if they got the chance to do it. And just it's a lot different. Obviously, it's a lot different on a road course to a circle course. It's dirt, you know. It'd be hard for them to adapt, I think.
And as far as you and the team at Knoxville this year, what do you guys want to achieve? What do you want to improve on come Saturday night?
Obviously, to make the Knoxville Nationals A main is a pretty big deal. For me personally, that's where I'm at. I don't go to racetracks just to make the A main. I'm going there to be competitive and hopefully finish up, you know, up the front. But, we're just going to come in here and try and do the best job we can and get the car going around nice and, you know, learn a lot while we're at it. And, yeah, just try to have a good time and, yeah, get to the A main would be a pretty good achievement, I think.
And, James, after Knoxville, what's the plans for racing here in the States before you head back to Australia?
The Nationals is my last race. I've got to go back to work with the full-time job, so I think go back to reality for a little bit. But we'll finish up then and hopefully sort out a deal to come back for next year.
Well, it sounds good. Well, folks, he's only 23 years old. Remember the name, James McFadden. He is definitely going to be one that fans here in central Pennsylvania are definitely going to be looking forward to seeing, hopefully in the years to come after the performance he turned in down at the Grandview Speedway. And, James, we want to thank you so much for taking time out here on the eve of the Knoxville Nationals to join us on the Sprint Car Show, and wish you all the best of luck and have a safe flight back, and good luck in the upcoming Australia 2013-2014 Sprint Car season.
Thanks for having me, mate. Much appreciated.
Sure thing. James McFadden joining us here on the Sprint Car Show. We'll take a break and wrap up our show right after this. Championship race teams like Donnie Schatz depend on quality parts to make it through a season. That's why they and other champions rely on Rod Ends from Rod End Supply.
Hi, this is Bob Douglas, and for 23 years, we have been delivering the best quality of rod ends on the market with on-time deliveries and customer service second to none. And this philosophy will continue.
To learn more about Rod End Supply, call them toll-free at 1-800-284-2902 or visit them online at rodendsupply.com. Rod End Supply. They don't just sell them, they race them.
Hi, this is Mike Erdley, and you're listening to the Sprint Car Show with Sean Wood.
Welcome back to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. Special thanks to our guests, James McFadden, Bob Trussell, and Glenn Fitzcharles for joining us on today's broadcast. And a quick get well soon to Tony Stewart after suffering a broken leg last night at Oskaloosa Speedway in Iowa. on Saturday at Sewan's Grove Speedway when the United Racing Company comes in for their annual standalone event. It's going to be a pink out for Kramer Williamson, of course, the driver of the famed number 73 Pink Panther. We are encouraging everyone who is coming to Sewan's Grove on Saturday night to wear pink to honor Kramer's memory. On Wednesday, August the 7th, from 5 to 9, Kramer's viewing will be held at the Rothermel Funeral Home on 25 West Pine Street in Palmyra, Pennsylvania. There will also be a viewing on Thursday, August the 8th, from 9 to 11, with services starting at 11 a.m. And we pass along our deepest sympathies to his wife, Sharon, and daughter, Felicia, and son, Kurt, in their time of need. It was a great pleasure to know Kramer Williamson. He was a true gentleman, a great in the sport, and he will never be forgotten. And we thank you for listening to this week's edition of the Sprint Car Show, brought to you by Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions. By Rod End Supply, they don't just sell them, they race them. And by the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, located outside of Turn 2 at the famed Knoxville Raceway. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Sean Wood.